If a man has money today, people do not care if he has cocoa bear. If a man has money today, people do not care if he has cocoa bear. He can commit murder and get off free and live in the governor's company. But if you are poor, people will tell you sure and a dog is better than you.
What we are living under is just an arbitrary human construct. It is something that can be removed. But unfortunately, we just go on because we must live in the moment. We have to continue with the present system until some sort of intellectual revolution takes place where people can say, well, this is just impossible. We will have to bite the bullet and introduce a sane monetary system. Well, that was 1694. This is 320 odd years later. It's not hard to work out mathematically. You don't need to understand logarithms. You just need to have a basic understanding of arithmetic, simple arithmetic, for God's sake.
Me not trust them. Follow the Chinese man, and you better move them from a frying pan. You college man, me no know ABC. You want some craggy and penny.
Hi, this is Martin, and you are listening to Kaput Radio. When we look around the present conditions of war against each other and the environment, one could not imagine that an act conceived in 1694 in London would be central to these present-day issues. After repeated quotes of the year 1694 in past programs of Kaput Radio regarding the finance system, I have the honor to present the original text of the Charter of the Bank of England and also a commentary illustrating the meaning of the quoted charter for present-day banking and its global effects. The British Parliamentary Act in Section 27 of the Charter outlines the method of global banking still practiced today and has been called the Big Bang of the global debt finance system. It is to circumstances of the rise of the British Empire that this happened in London. Other historical circumstances are also presented. Welcome to the show.
So the bank was founded in 1694. This is a time of quite a lot of upheaval in England. England and France are continually at war in this period. It's just continued aggression. In 1694, at the time when the bank was founded, at this time they had to find a way to rescue the public finances from some disarray. So it was the idea of a chap called William Paterson, who was a Scottish merchant working in the city of London. He and his associates came up with a plan to raise a sum of money by public subscription, which would then be lent to the government.
Section 19. Their Majesties may appoint rules for transferring and may make the subscribers a corporation subject to redemption. And that it shall and may be lawful to and for their Majesties by letters patent under the Great Seal of England to limit, direct, and appoint how and in what manner and proportions and under what rules and directions the said sum of £1,200, part of the said sum of £1,500, and the said yearly sum of £100,000, part of the said yearly sum of £140,000, and every or any part or proportions thereof, may be assignable or transferable, assigned or transferred, to such person or persons only as shall freely and voluntarily accept of the same, and not otherwise, and to incorporate all and every such subscribers and contributors, their successors or assignees, to be one body corporate and politic by the name of the Governor and Company of the Bank of England, and by the same name of the Governor and Company of the Bank of England, to have perpetual succession and a common seal, and that they and their successors, by the name aforesaid, shall be able and capable in law to have purchase, receive, possess, enjoy and retain to them and their successors lands, rents, tenements, and hereditaments of what kind nature or quality soever, and also to sell, grant, demise, alien, or dispose of the same, and by the same name to sue and implead, and be sue and impleaded, answer and be answered in courts of record or any place whatsoever, and to do and execute all and singular other matters and things by the name aforesaid, that to them shall, or more appertain to do, subject nevertheless to the proviso and condition of redemption herein after mentioned.
The subscribers were to be incorporated as the Governor and Company of the Bank of England. The charter was signed on the 27th of July 1694. Since the end of the 17th century, the bank has managed the government's accounts and it's made loans to finance spending in times of both peace and war.
In what things they may nevertheless deal. Provided that nothing herein contained shall any ways be construed to hinder the said corporation from dealing in bills of exchange, or in buying or selling bullion, gold or silver, or in selling any goods, wares or merchandise whatsoever, which shall be really and bona fide be left or deposited with the said corporation, for money lent and advanced thereon, and which shall not be redeemed at the time agreed on, or within 3 months after, or from selling such goods as shall or may be the produce of lands purchased by the said corporation.
Welcome to the show, Graham. I would like to ask you, could you give us a commentary about what the meaning of these words actually present in this today's world?
The meaning of the words that were just spoken, I must say, they were very understandable, much more understandable than reading them, especially the bit about how money gets into circulation on the basis of a deposit by the borrower into the bank. And the significance of borrowing in monetary form, whatever your deposit or security is, has great significance with our economy, and our economy today runs our culture. We can look at our culture and look at it in from different directions and from different perspectives. And I don't think there is a perspective, except maybe one, that we say is rational. Our culture today is not able to cope with a situation that's anti-humanitarian. What we have to do and what we would like to do are two different things. This is one of the significances of that section 27 that I just mentioned to do with how money gets into circulation. It causes, first of all, an unnecessary, completely unnecessary scarcity in a world of abundance. As yet we have an abundance, sustainable abundance, of every other resource except the one resource that gives us access to that wonderful world of abundance that we live in. That scarcity makes us competitive, exploitative. We must exploit, because of that scarcity, every resource, which is human resources, are exploited to the nth degree for low wages, low cost of production, meaning profit. Without profit, today our economy collapses, as we have seen in national instances in Europe, particularly, say, Greece, and others on the verge, like Spain and Italy, Portugal. We've seen in those instances one of the significant points of the scarcity that's produced by the words in that section 27 of the Charter of the Bank of England.
So this is contrary to a lot of popular misbelief or disbelief that money can be created out of thin air and profitability is a choice thing. So it's absolutely not the case.
I don't know of any money created out of thin air.
It's a popular convention, people say.
But all money at its inception, as it comes into being, is not created out of thin air, but it is a loan against something, a value, an asset that you, the borrower, have deposited with your bank.
And that's even the case for if the borrower is the government, isn't it?
The nation itself does exactly the same thing, in as much as the bank will buy, up to a point, our government bonds. A government bond has a yield. They have to be redeemed. And It just up to the point where the nation can service the virtual loan in the form of a treasury note, I find with some instances that point can be ably evidenced where banks don't practice good banking, they practice loans for the sake of making a loan which to them hopefully brings a profit. But a bank that does not understand that unless the nation can redeem all its bonds, all its treasury notes, is not going to be able to redeem those bonds. You'd like to buy a Greek bond? Anybody? But banks have done that, and those banks have suffered. Good banking practice? No way. You loan money on the basis that you can service the loan. That means return with interest your capital borrowing.
And the second point is the profitability. Profit itself is a requirement here. It's not a choice. A lot of people say, oh, you could forgo a little bit of your profits and be charitable or, you know, give away to cooperation.
Again, that's another significant point. Where is this method that we have retained for 300 odd years makes it impossible for us to be charitable, except in isolated instances. Overall, we are and have to be and do practice exploitation of each other and of all resources to the point where we can destroy our natural resources, but profit has to be made or we go hungry.
And it's purely a numerical algorithm play, is it?
It's simple. You want to eat now or think of the future for your grandchildren. You can't think of the future for your grandchildren. You must make your profit now out of any resource, whether you're destroying it or as we're doing with the oceans, with the timbers, with a lot of food sources are being destroyed because of that scarcity. We cannot, under any circumstances, think long-term and think of others. We think of one thing, and that is profit, if we want to survive. And that is either as an individual, a company, a group must make a profit. And as a nation, that government won't survive unless it makes a profit. And the profit today is not adequate to the profits that's going to be needed tomorrow. That is the requirement. Everybody's heard of growth and expansion. That is a must. It's not just some economic term spouted by multinationals and governments. It's an absolute.
That's inherent in this method of security deposit of a client or of a nation and getting a portion of this as a account to bring the money into circulation that way. That is the entire reason.
Well, there's no other legal way of doing it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that has to be pointed out. This is an exclusive from 1694 going back.
Yes. Wow. Others have tried and they've paid the price. So they've done it on in isolated cases. If anything can be done, it would have to be done on an international basis where a sane monetary system, although the sanity and rationality thing of it can be debated either way, it's sane if you think, well, it takes care of itself as a system. The system takes care of itself. You must follow this system if you want to survive, that sort of thing. Mm. But to change the system, it would take an international effort.
Because of the inherent competition here.
Yes.
The scarcity.
Taking care of business.
The scarcity of the finance itself.
Oh, yes.
So we are stuck with this for over 300 years, and I just wonder, some people must have recognized this, but it doesn't seem to be apparent in the media.
Well, in the media, anything like that has been downgraded. I won't mention his name, but there was another fellow who was very interested in changing the present system for a new one, and he suggested we have a sort of social credit, another form of banking and of financing government expenditure. Government expenditure can be done another way again. But the media you just spoke about delegates what he says to almost to being, what's the term, somebody who is way out. And certainly what he was saying was way out of line with taking care of business in the modern sense. The modern sense of taking care of business is make a profit or else. That's it.
Okay. So when we think of modern money, the profit has to be obtained from someone outside of your own sphere or your own economy, or how does this operate? Where does this profit come from?
In a sense, profit is misused, but I can't think of another word that would describe the situation. And that situation is that we use the money that we make from the borrowed capital, the extra money, we use that for our own expenditure and livelihood, and governments, from governments to multinationals to the individual. But you only get that profit at the expense of somebody else's borrowing their deposit, whatever it might be, with the banking system. So that we may call it profit, but in the terms of the reality of the person who has supplied that profit, it is just more debt. That profit comes from someone else's debt.
Well, that's an interesting aspect.
Can we call it profit? We can, on a so-called selfish individual basis, we can call that profit, but it is somebody else's debt.
Which exacerbates the whole problem. The whole situation becomes even more pressured.
Precarious. According to science, the destruction of just by overuse of chemicals, which must be sold, the chemical people must make a profit, destroying our arable food land, food production. And we go out and we take from nature fish to the point where the oceans are dying, according to science, according to research done by the CSIRO here in Australia and other similar bodies, scientific bodies around the world, to the point of destroying our atmosphere. And if you look at somebody really making a big profit, have a look at the atmosphere in Beijing and other parts of the world that where we have all our production done because it's cheaper. This is one of the significances of the system that you were asking about in the first place. Now, humanity itself is being destroyed, as you can see if you like to look.
Well, we have, of course, a special segment in there, which is the arms industries and the warfare, or the threat of war, being also a subject to this profit-seeking, isn't it?
Well, in my view, war is profitable, obviously, because we must produce weaponry, we must produce armaments of all kinds. And why we must do that is because we must make a profit. We must produce these goods. But what is the real object of war and armaments production? What is the object? Is it we want to dominate somebody else? Or we want to get out from the clutches of somebody else? The point I'm trying to make is that is not the motivating force. The motivating force in the production of all armaments, and it's huge, is profit. The armament manufacturer really is not thinking guns, torpedoes, bombs, ships, planes, whatever you call the ordnances. They're thinking of profit. If we do this, we will make a profit. If we do that, we will make a profit. If we can produce a war somewhere, anywhere in the world, and we can sell them the arms, what do we do? We're not interested in shooting each other particularly. All we want to do is make a bloody profit as an industrial producer. And we can't stop. If we pull that industry out of the equation, our economy would collapse. It produces too much of export income to be cancelled out. The economy, the financial part of the economy, just can no longer cope with the need for profit.
You mentioned earlier in the conversation the need for cutting costs, production costs, low wages. Now, we're facing a world where activity is replaced by robots for the same reason, isn't it? For cost-cutting reasons. What do the humans supposed to do then? It's a big question for a lot of young people now in the future. Where would they find employment and what to do for it?
Yes, well, I mean, there's a couple of questions within that. Finding employment, what is meant by that normally is that what they want to find is some sort of income. It's called wages and salaries. That's all. Again, if you ask most people, I don't think, and young people, there's not that much interest in work per se. It's the lifestyle that comes through having adequate income. The bigger the income, the bigger the wages, the better. Not because they love doing what they're doing. In most cases, they don't love what they're doing.
They need the access to the money.
They must have access to the money. It does not apply in a sane world. It only applies to our population, our global population, living under the auspices of the present system, which makes it imperative that you make a profit. And that is all they're doing. And you're talking about low wages and robotics. That's interesting in itself, because the capital producing the robotics is at the moment a bit higher than the cost of low wages. And as the technology develops, it will come down and down and down to where low wages, no matter how low, are not able to compete with robotics, because what we have is what they call a capital-intensive economy, and that means less wages, the better, and robotics do not require very much in the way of wages, except for the producers of the robots, which will end up robots doing the work of making the robots anyway. And it means that humanity will be freed then to do whatever work they find needs doing, just educating themselves. Yes. Where does the income come from? It comes from all the work being done by the robots. I mean, there will be very little significance placed on the need for money in the first place. But money is very important up to that point where we live in a world where robotics, where automation does everything for us. We need money up to that point. And so the future of the world probably is just, how are we going to distribute this wonderful stuff? The robots will take care of the distribution.
Will they be kind to us? I mean, once they start building themselves, why would they factor in a human component at all?
Because, you see, we always keep a hand on the string that is attached to the plug. We can always pull the plug, and and the robots, of course, will know this because we shall factor that in.
Okay.
I think it's quite significant, and those things that we've mentioned are some of the significant points made by the reading of the Charter of the Bank of England. In our psyche, in our nature, we have been able to survive the evolutionary tree that we've witnessed so far as humans are concerned, has been brought about just by that alone, that ability to compete with nature in the first place when we didn't know much about it, to compete with other tribes who might grab our land or whatever it was that we found valuable. We survived by competition up to the point of the Industrial Revolution, where there was absolutely no need for competition. We could all cooperate and produce everything eventually as the Industrial Revolution progressed. We're quite capable of producing everything sustainably for every person on this planet. The whole 7 billion of us could today be sustainably sustained.
And you don't see a shortage in water and land, arable land, all these panic cries in
no,
the media.
We know we can do it. Science tells us we can do it. But science is handcuffed, tied down, because of the scarcity.
Yeah.
The funding for science to research and somehow or other, they've found enough funding to actually do the research into sustainability, even though it's more of a token than anything else. Governments have been, in some instances, for quite a number of years, funding research for sustainable outcomes. in some cases, funding the actual production of sustainable outcomes, just as experimental plots. So and we know we can do it.
You could say basically that the potential is there, but it is always cut short by the financial system we've set up since 320 years.
Yeah. Well, we know that we are not really competitive by nature, except where it is absolutely necessary. We know that if we listen to ourselves, listen to the comments in all forms of media today, it's very quickly recognized that we are a cooperative and not a competitive species. We cry out for cooperation in just about every sphere of human endeavor, if you look carefully at the underlying critiques of what we're doing. What is needed is that cooperation, but under the present system that we're talking about, that's another significant point. It is not possible under the present system to cooperate. We are forced to compete for a scarce product that gives us access to the things we need for life.
In what things they may nevertheless deal. Provided that nothing herein contained shall anyways be construed to hinder the said corporation from dealing in bills of exchange, or in buying or selling bullion, gold or silver, or in selling any goods, wares or merchandise whatsoever, which shall be really and bona fide be left or deposited with the said corporation for money lent and advanced thereon, and which shall not be redeemed at the time agreed on, or within 3 months after, or from selling such goods as shall or may be the produce of lands purchased by the said corporation.
Well, yes. This was a very long talk, Graham. Would you be so kind, maybe you got another sort of summary of the whole thing, which started in 1694, as we outlined?
Yeah, well, I have. Because you did mention a little while ago regarding the significance of the debt system. And my concept of the whole thing is that we, as a global population, have a problem. And that results in a whole network of problems adversely affecting our entire civilization. Now, once you've borrowed the bank converted value of your asset into the form of money, you become liable, not only for its return, but for the associated costs and interest. The requirement here is that you make a profit. All money is converted into existence in the same way, so your profit is another borrower's liability. You have then become the first link in an unstoppable chain reaction of a debt obligation into perpetuity. The chain's extension is not just linear, but multidimensional. The linear part is just asset value, loan, profit and repayment. But the other dimensions require growth and expansion, all in a vain attempt to bridge the ever-expanding shortage of finance in an ever-expanding economy. A disastrous debt cycle is caused by continual loan repayments being removed from circulation. Because profit is unable to match the sum of the initial loan, there can never be enough in the domestic marketplace to purchase local produce.
Well, very well done. Thank you very much for your incredible, valuable time and input to this program.
Any time I can help, I'm only too happy to help get the message across to the listener. It must be a hard bit, but it's either a hard bit here or a hard bit down the track, meaning destruction of our environment and society.
Thanks for listening. I hope you could find some valuable information from this presentation. And thanks to Jennifer Adams, speaking from the Museum and Historical Collection of the Bank of England, taken from YouTube. The charter is from the archives of the House of Lords in London. Len spoke sections 19 and 27. And thanks to Graham for most of the groundwork of research on this subject and the commentary. The intro song was by 1930s Calypso King, Money is King. My name is Martin, and I'll catch you all again with more Kaput Radio.